podcast. What a massive week it's been in marathon distance running all over the world. Thanks for joining us again. Thanks for downloading the show. Thanks to Runners Tribe for sponsoring this week's show, episode number 25. I've just come fresh off runnerstribe.com reading the Mark Tucker article, actually, on the Michael Shally situation at the moment, and very informative and very entertaining over there. So thanks to those guys for supporting the show this week. Good evening, Julian and Bradley. How are we going?
Hey, mate.
Life is good.
I wish we recorded that 5 minutes we just had off air, because you were pretty peppy. School a week into school holidays. How are you going, Bradley?
Yeah, I'm absolutely loving it. I was down at a local cafe today interviewing Jordan Guzman, who will be our guest for this week. So, yeah, certainly beat today at work.
Yeah, certainly does. And the body's feeling good, feeling fresh?
Yeah, well, I ran 180K just over 180K last week. So, as fresh as you can be off 180K.
Yeah, right. Julian, it's not all happy news down your way. Ballarat, a few little niggles creeping through.
Yeah, just, I don't know what it was. Something about the weekend stirred up a few things. Like, firstly, a bit of plantar. Well, I like to call it the plantar sphincter. Just a little nickname for my injury. And then just the old man back. Continually get this. I don't know. I haven't had it for a while, but it's an issue I deal with, like, continually. So that's back again. Hopefully, normally it takes about a week to 10 days to come good. Probably day two or three at the moment. So we'll see what happens.
It's funny. Listeners will know if they've been listening to a while that you've had those back issues. And I did note when I saw you on Saturday in person down Gels Park Relays, you were actually asking me how my back was after the drive. Like, it's like everyone gets sore backs when they sit in cars for a while. I was like thinking to myself, why is he asking me this stuff? My back's fine.
Oh, I was just thinking, like, you were there for what, 4 hours or so? And I was in the car for, two max, and my back was like real tight. So I was just imagining what another 2 hours would have done to it. So, yeah, I guess we're not all old.
Different quality backs, maybe, yeah.
We didn't spend years digging holes like I did, which put me in a bad spot.
Yeah, rightio. Brad, kick us off. Tell us about your week.
Rightio. So kicked off Monday with just two easy runs, so about an hour in the morning and 35 minutes in the afternoon, and then just did some 100-meter strides just on the gravel after that 35 minutes. I was a little bit flat at the start of the week, and I don't know if it was just it'd probably been about the third week of increased mileage and also coming off Canberra Marathon. So that was, 2 hours 15 at 4-minute Ks in pretty rough condition. So I didn't feel great Monday, and did a session Tuesday afternoon and did a 15-minute tempo on this sort of undulating bike path. Probably ran between sort of 3:10s and 3:15s for the 15 minutes, which took me to a base of a hill. Jogged for 2 minutes up to the sort of steeper section of the hill. And I wanted to run 2 to 3 minute long hills, but I was pretty cooked after the tempo. So I ended up just doing 5 70-second hills, jog back recovery. So in hindsight, it was pretty good that I decided to change the session there and then, because I would have cooked myself if I tried to actually force myself up 2 to 3 minute long hills. And the hills that I was doing, though, about 20 metres of elevation in sort of 70 seconds, so reasonably steep. So that was Tuesday, so didn't have a lot of confidence after that. Then Wednesday, got out for an hour 45 over some rolling hills out at Mulligan. So that was, 25, just over 25K at 4:06s with about 350 metres of elevation, and actually felt pretty good on that run compared to how I felt Tuesday. Thursday was just an hour in the morning and 35 in the afternoon, so nothing special. And then Friday, got out for 35 or so minutes in the morning, and then my session for the afternoon was 2x5K with a 2-minute float. And I sort of went into it with pretty low expectations after Tuesday, and my coach said, look, if you can just aim to run around 3:15s per K. If you don't feel great, drop it back to 3:20s. But I actually felt a lot better than I thought I would, and ended up running around 16 minutes for the first 5K. Floated 2 minutes in about 340, 345? Hang on, let me just check. 338 pace for 2 minutes, and then ran like 1544 for the second 5K. So I was pretty stoked with that session. That was like averaging 312 for 10.5K. So that was Friday. Saturday, just two easy runs again. So just over an hour in the morning and 35 minutes in the afternoon, followed by six 10-second hill sprints. And then Sunday, I contacted a few of Dick Telford's boys, and they've been running out at Stromlo, which is, I guess, where Deep did a lot of his training. And I haven't run out there. I haven't done a long run for probably 3 years. There used to be all forest, and now they're starting to actually develop it and build houses. But you can still do most of the run that Deke would have done back in the day, and it's bloody tough. I did 32.5K in 2 hours 15 at 4:09, but it's between 600 and 700 metres of climbing, with like a couple of really long climbs from sort of 20, I think it's from 25, oh yeah, from about 25K all the way up to about 28K, is just this sort of gradual grind. So you can see why Deke, you know, got so strong out there, and it's something that I want to actually get out there more often, because I see a lot of benefit in it. So that was Sunday morning, and then got out in the afternoon for 35 minutes, and I felt absolutely amazing. I don't know if it was because of all of the hills I did in the morning, but I averaged 404s for 35 minutes Sunday afternoon for a 41K day. So, yeah, 83K for the week, and first half didn't feel great, but back end I felt like I started to click.
Yeah, very good. Were you the big dog in that group on the Sunday? You controlling the pace?
So there was myself, Jordan Guzman, and Reece Langdon sort of off the front for the first, like, major climb, and then we sort of it's called Dairy Farmers, and then we regrouped with, like, Hugh Williams was out there, James Nipperis was having his first run since Com Games, and then a few guys peeled off at various stages, but then towards the end it was just, yeah, myself, Hugh Williams, Reece Edwards, and Reece Langdon that ran through to 30K, and then I had 32 down, so I did a 2K lap of the cross-country course on my own to finish.
Yeah, one big dog less stand at the end by the sounds of this.
Yeah.
Does not play well with others.
That is 2x5K, is pretty solid too.
Yeah, like it was better than... So I did 2x5K about just over a week before Lake Biwa, and ran those in sort of 16:20 and 16:10. So, yeah, like, I don't think I've ever done that session that well before, so that's a good sign.
Yep, that's pretty solid. You got any races coming up?
Yeah, I'm going to do Sydney 10.
When's that?
Not this coming weekend, the weekend after, so May 5th.
Yeah, right. Yeah. That'd be good for a sit out.
Yeah, just to see where I'm at. I should hopefully run... I don't know, I'm guessing somewhere between... I'd like to think I'd run under 30-30.
Yeah.
But we'll see, yeah.
That's good. Julian, take
what sort of course is it like? Is Sydney... Sorry, I was dunking. Sydney 10.
What's that? Sydney 10. It's two 5K loops, really, with probably two major turns each lap. And then you run into the athletics stadium and finish on the track. It's pretty quick. Like, other than the U-turns, Liam Adams holds the course record in like 29:30 odd. So okay. It's normally one in... Last year it was one in slightly slower than 30 minutes, but that was because I think they went out pretty slow through 5K. But it's normally one in sub 30, and I'd expect it to be one in sub 30 this year based on the guys that are running.
Yeah, who's running? Right. Who you got?
Hugh Williams is going to have a run. Mike Roger is going to have a run. Yeah, pretty much all of Dick's guys are going to be there. I'd imagine a few of the Sydney boys, like maybe DeCanto, Matt Hudson. Yeah, so there are a few that I know of.
Mm. Very good. Julian, over to you all week. You banged out a pretty impressive cross-country league on the weekend. What else happened?
Well, I started the week with like a bit of an Achilles type sort of niggle, so I had Monday off. And it really wasn't like an Achilles. I worked out, by Tuesday I'd worked out it was kind of more tib post, I reckon. So I gave it a bit of a self-massage, felt good. Felt good Tuesday, but I kept it short, so I only did like a 9K run and an 8K run. Got out around the lake, saw Tony Lockett, which was pretty cool. It was fucking cold, and he's wearing these little shorts and a T-shirt, and he had his tan on him, and I saw him walking towards me. I'm like, whoa, have a look at this bloke. Like, he's looking real good. And then as I got closer, I'm like, shit, that's Tony Lockett.
How lean is he these days, though?
Yeah, crazy.
Because it's funny, when you posted that, I saw him pretty much to the day 1 year ago, running around Bradman Oval in Bowral. When I first ran past him, I'm like, God, that guy looks familiar. And it took probably two laps for me to work out exactly who it was because he was just so lean.
Yeah, and the only reason that I kind of thought about this a little more is because some guy who was walking the lake stopped and started walking him with him. And as they're running towards me, I was here. This guy was like chatting on about some sort of charity he'd set up, and he was trying to get like plug it to back it or something. And I'm like, oh, wait, there's something going on more there. So, oh, shit, that's Tony Lockett. Like, he's like 6'5", maybe, pretty tall dude. Maybe not that tall, but yeah, he looked fit. He looked real good.
That's the weekly Tony Lockett update.
Wednesday, went out, ran the Moose Loop just because of the Achilles, just didn't want to push it too much. So I did like a half session where I ran all the uphills hard and then just recovered on the downhills. And it's like a 10-mile loop. It's a pretty solid effort. You can go up some pretty good hills. So it's kind of like a hill rep session, really, where you're continually moving. Just jogged at Run Club in the other. Thursday, jog in the morning in the other. And then Friday, got out on the trails a bit in the afternoon. So we've got like this little loop. We're a new mountain bike course, so bloody slow going out there, mainly because it's just so twisty and turny, but it's really cool to run on. Like, it's a nice way to break up going for a monotonous 8K. On Saturday, Gels Park, which is the first cross-country race of the year. It's like a 6K course around a parkland, like an open grass area. And it's been going a while now. Like, they've changed the direction of the race over the years, and there's always been slight little changes to the course as well, so it's hard to know exactly what you're running every year. But it is good because everyone else around you runs the same course, so you can kind of tell where you're at and how you're going. So I was in the first leg, and I was Ballarat's Div 2, so we start on the second line at the start line, probably about, what was it, 10 metres behind the group in front. And looking in front, I'm like counting off these names that I was watching in the Com Games last week. So who was up there? Ryan Gregson, Riley Shaw was up there from Melbourne. There was Jack Rayner, Brett Robinson was running that first leg, Andy Buchanan. Well, he was behind me actually, I believe, from Bendigo, but it didn't take long for him to get in front. Joel Tobin White, the triathlete turned runner who's really going well. Who else was up there? Oh, Matt Clark, he was up there from
he was in Div 2 actually, but he quickly made his way up the line. So, and then even in Div 2, I looked across and saw some bloody guns. Oh, Jeff Risley was up there. So, like, you look at the results, you see that first pack. I thought, oh, let's just jump on the first pack and see how long I can hold on. Answer, 1,500 metres.
I don't think it's even that much. I reckon I was at about 400 metres and you weren't still on him then.
Oh, I still haven't caught him yet.
Oh, okay, that's what was happening. Yeah, right.
Maybe, yeah. I'm pretty sure that I got to the back of the pack at, like, at a K, I was on the back of the pack. I've seen some footage.
Yeah.
I can confirm that. And then we went downhill, kind of lost a little bit. Then we went through all the corners, lost a bit more. And then the uphill, I was well and truly gone. And then it turned into like, okay, I've got a one bloke in front of me. He's starting to pull away. I wonder how far the bloke is behind me. And you just turn into a bit of a time trial slog. But that was good because Jeff Rise, like I watched those blokes fight it away up in front. There was probably like six to eight of them. Ended up being Ryan Gregson winning the leg. 17:05, I think it was, which is bloody fast. And it was just so cool to watch. Like, it was about as good as a field as you could think of, really, in any sort of race in the country. Like, it's even bigger than some of the national fields, I reckon, the class in that first leg. So that was awesome to watch, as much as I could watch it. But, yeah, I mean, I finished 18:04. I ran pretty happy, felt shit, like, finishing, being so far behind everyone. But then stopped my watch and was pretty happy with the time that it was. Pretty happy with the effort that I put out as well. So, yeah, and then I went for a bit of an extended cool down. And one of those post-race jogs where your heart rate cannot go down. And I don't think it's a very good idea to do, to be honest. Like, I'll probably not do that ever again. But just go an extra, like, 5K on what I normally did, like, really took it out of me. So I'll scrap that next time I consider it. Sunday, woke up, went to do a long run and got 20K of a probably 36K planned. And my foot, like, that Saturday night when I got home, my foot was just killing me, like really sharp pain, kind of right in the inside of the heel. And I'm thinking, oh, have I fucking torn the plantar fascia, like, totally? Or do I have calcaneus stress fracture? Like, this is not good. I barely slept that night because of how sore it was. And then I woke up, thought, oh, I'll go and run. Like, it normally comes good after 10 minutes. But I'm jogging along and 10 minutes goes by. I look at my watch and think, yeah, not quite good yet. 20 minutes. Still not good. 40 minutes going, oh, this could be trouble. And then I got to like an hour and a half and we went right past my house. And I thought, I'm just going to call this off. Because what was happening, I was starting to favor like the outside of my foot to try to take it off the painful area. And I was getting like a little bit, felt like a little bit of bone bruising or bone stress on the outside. So just loading up areas that I don't load normally. And I like, that is the real issue. You can get stressy really quickly from that. So I just bailed on that. That was my week.
Yeah, right. First question, why did you do that longer warm down? Is that so you didn't have to do like the afternoon run, like combine the two?
Well, I did a morning run. So I went out for a little shakeout. It felt amazing. Drove up. And I was always planning to go about sort of 8 to 10K. I don't know. I felt like 6K effort would be a little easier than it was, but I underestimated how hard you actually run in those cross-country races, even if they are short.
Yeah, 100%. What do you got, 2-3 weeks from that pulled-out long run until race day? So, like, modifying things?
Not really. Like, I woke up Monday and I mean, I did have some good Andy and Flams, which kind of settled the foot. So I did a long run the next day that I planned. Like, I did Sunday's run on Monday, so I got it done. But I really hurt my back, I think, from driving so much on Saturday. And that's just, like, if anything, that's my biggest concern right now. Mm-hmm. I've got like this real dodgy kind of lumbar sacrum sort of area, and it's on fire. Like, everything is spasming in that area. I'm super tight. I find it hard to stand up straight. I can't really bend over well. So running on it's pretty harsh, really jarring. So I can't train through it. So today I just ran 7K in the morning, and it was a bit rough. And we'll see how we go over the next couple of days. But fitness-wise, I'm really happy. Like, I don't need to do too much more, I don't think, fitness-wise. I just want to keep consistent. I might have to lose a few days of training, but I just need to be on the start line healthy. That's what I need right now.
Yeah, this is just Brad, you did this. Have like a week off, like 3 weeks out, then come good and don't worry about much of a taper.
Yeah, mine was a little bit further out. But it does raise an interesting point in that you see some guys like Michael Shelley who don't race a lot at all, like in the lead up to a major event. And I'm a bit that way as well, in that when you race, if you're not used to absolutely hammering yourself in training, you go to this new level in racing. And I reckon there's always a pretty big injury risk associated with racing. So I guess it just raises the question of, are you better off not racing much in the lead up to your A race?
We'll ask Yuki Kawachi.
Let's not include him.
Especially when you chuck a pair of spikes on as well. That changes things up a bit.
Yeah, a bit of a change.
And you're not running on like a path or getting rhythm, and you're kind of running through holes and shit.
I know, like down here, the cross-country scene is huge, especially local. And the boys like used to run every weekend. So it's kind of part of the culture. It's like Saturdays, they even used to do a workout in the morning and then go and do a race in the afternoon. That's how big cross country was. So, I know what you mean. Like, it's a safer option not to race, but I think I get a lot out of racing.
Especially as you get older as well. That whole, because you're not young anymore, Julian.
Yeah, I know. Tell me about it.
Yeah, right. My week. What else you got? I'm not what? I want to know the end of that sentence.
I'm not dysfunctional yet.
my week was pretty similar to Julian's. Some jogging Monday morning, 6K in the morning, 16K in the afternoon. Tuesday, went out for 8K in the morning. Then I went to Shepparton in the afternoon, did quarters over there, hit 14:28. I haven't hit 14:28 probably since my Chico State days back in the day, I reckon. That was the last time I've been running that fast for quarters. So it's good to get a bit of old form going again on the quarter session. Did that with Archie Reid. Hovered probably between 67 and 70 for the reps and about 38 to 40 for the 200s in the Vaporflies to get on the track. Just love those shoes on that track. It's really good, nice and still night. And yeah, enjoying hitting the track up with that one. Wednesday, easy 6K in the morning. That 90-minute loop in the afternoon at 4:36s. Still can't get 20K for that 90 minutes, but hopefully this week might be the week. 6K in the morning, Thursday. 14K with a few strides, 2K of wind sprints in the afternoon to try to get some freshness for Gels Park Relay. Easy 5K on Friday. And then, Gels Park ran the second leg. So as you mentioned before, Andy Buchanan went through second overall, second fastest time of the day. I think he ran 17:16, which that was blowing my mind. Like when I was waiting to get tagged for him, they had a big clock there and I was like, is this for real? These guys are running this quick. Like, I was thinking it must have been short or I wasn't sure. Gregson kind of come through 10 seconds in front of him and I had a Glenn Huntley guy out front and Bendigo was second overall. So, had a crack, but, yeah, I'm no good at cross-country. I haven't ran cross-country for about 3 years and I reckon from about 1,500 metres in on the first lap, so people don't know we do 2x3K laps, I was in a world of pain. Well, not so much pain. I just felt I couldn't get any rhythm and I was trying to run as hard as I could and wasn't really getting much in return. And, going through that first lap, it's kind of halfway up a hill and, I felt and looked shocking and just kind of knuckled down and just tried to run as fast as I could. Finished off in 18:20, which was a bit behind the wise man over there. I was thinking of him in the second lap when I was dying. I'm just like, come on, just got to run quicker than whatever Julian's ran, because I obviously didn't know because you were behind me. But, yeah, hopefully it toughens me up a bit going forward, because it's been about 3 years, I think, since I've ran cross-country and obviously struggling a bit on that stuff. But that's, yeah, I've never ran that course in that direction, but the fastest I've been the other way is 18.36. So similar thoughts to you, Julian. It was kind of disheartening to get smashed by so much. But then I looked at my watch and I was like, well, just looking at that time and my effort levels, I'm pretty happy with that one. Jordan Wu.
Who passed you? Someone passed you?
Yeah, so I got the Glenn Huntley guy. So that we were in front for about 6 seconds, I reckon. And then Jordan Williams went straight past me. And I knew he was coming behind me because Brett Robertson tagged him about 10 seconds behind Andy. And I had this thought in my head. I'm like, oh, yeah, this guy's a 1,500-meter guy. Just finished fifth at Commonwealth Games. Might be a bit of a stretch to run like 6K. And then he just absolutely flashed past me. And then like the opposite side of my brain was like, oh yeah, he is a full-time athlete and he is pretty good at cross country. Like I remember him winning juniors and NCAA, AA or whatever they are over in the States there. Like I think he ran the third fastest time of the day, maybe 17, 18. And like doing that in the second leg by yourself, I reckon that's probably better than Gregson and Andy's run, actually, like, because we had a lot of traffic out there and there's people you're picking off, and no one paced him or he couldn't sit in a pack and stuff, so he went past me. And then a younger fella from Western Athletics, I think it was, is it Cody Shanahan? You might know better than
Cody.
And he just looks effortless. He went past me just before we went through the first split, and then and probably put 10 seconds on me really quick, and then the probably margin was the same at the end. Like, I just couldn't get back on him. I'm not sure what he ran. I reckon he probably ran maybe 18.05, 18.10 kind of thing. But
I reckon he ran the same as me, something similar.
That'd be right, because I reckon I would have...
Slightly slower, actually.
Yeah, that would be about spot on, because I reckon I gave him 5 head start, and I reckon he probably put 5 into me. But, yeah, just couldn't get on the back of him, and I think he probably battled that, because I ran 9 minutes and then 9.20, so popped a bit. But, yeah, it was good strength, but big day. I can't do that. Like, we left Echuca at 7:15 and got home at 6:15. Yeah, just can't go sitting in the car. Can't spend 11 hours on me Saturday to run 6K. So, yeah, about 4 hours there, 4 hours back. And I went down with the boys on the bus from Bendigo. And, yeah, I think I'll take my car next time just because there's a bit of stuffing around and stop here for Maccas and do this and that. And, yeah, it's good to make the effort, but...
Get on the piss on the way home?
No, we ran when we got home, actually, so it was good because I actually stayed in Bendigo. So when I say got home at 6:15, that was back to Bendigo, not even Echuca. The other boys had to do another hour getting home. But, I ran with Andy, which was good. When we got off the bus, we just did an easy 35 minutes. And if people don't know, like, he's very handy over the cross country. Like, he's mixing it with a lot of guys who can run 13.20 for 5K, and obviously his strongest leg. And we're kind of having a good discussion about why he can't keep up with him on the track, but he can kind of keep up with him on cross country and what's coming up with maybe like world cross country for him in a couple of next year, I think it is. Like, that's probably his big chance to make a Australian team. And yeah, it was kind of good just unpacking the day's results. And then Sunday we won Division 3 by 9 minutes, which was nice and handy. So we had a pretty decent team for Div 3. And then Sunday banged out 32k in Bendigo with Andy, averaged 4:16, just that normal 32K loop. He did 28, and I just did the extra 4K on the end there. And then I ran home from the pub on Sunday night. There was a function at the pub down the road, and I went there and decided I'd run home to watch London Marathon. So that was good. 1.2K home, a week of about 156K.
So, question.
Yeah.
You run that 14:28 or whatever at deep quarters. Did you think you'd come out and run a bit quicker at cross country?
I don't know. Yeah, I wasn't really sure because I finished that quarters on Tuesday. I'm like, geez, I'm in shape all of a sudden. Like, I was really happy with that and effort levels and stuff. But I think I really battled with like the rhythm and kind of getting into the flow. I don't know if that was the best course to kind of, judge what kind of shape I am in. But I was talking to Richard about it afterwards, and like, I think there was a lot of guys similar ability to me in between 18 minutes and 18.10. that have come off summers. So, like, they've come off running, you know, 14.10, 14.15, 14.18, like yourself, whereas I've come off a marathon, had 2 weeks to recover, done 6 weeks work, and then that was my first showing. So to be only kind of 10 or 15 seconds behind those guys, I think in context is, and a lot of those guys ran first. So, and I think, like, I know I'm not sure how much banter you're going to put in here, but that second league is definitely so much harder than the first league, I reckon, just because there's, you're catching people and you're lapping them and you're running wide and people are trying to move out for you, but then they'll move back in and you're not sure what they're going to do. And you're really time trialing it with traffic compared to being in a race.
Yeah, well, I mean, the track guys, right, I'd argue that when they get to Jowls, they're coming off their actual break after Nationals and probably had quite a bit, maybe less rest than you anyway. I mean, less chance to get back into it. But it's more about the first leg versus second leg. Like, there's a reason everyone emails their team manager on, like, Wednesday, Thursday saying, hey, can I have first leg? It's because your time looks better. Like, there's no doubt about it. Mm. So...
I was absolutely cooked, though, after that. Like, that was me, yeah. I was eyeballs out. Like, I was battling big time after
that. Everyone at Jowls is. No one finishes Jowls and goes, oh, that was easier than I thought.
Yeah, I was, like, looking at people coming through, and I'm like, oh, geez, they're over-exaggerating this a bit. The course isn't that hard. And then I was, yeah, about to vomit on myself at the end there. But I think there's a bit on that, the first race back, I reckon it always stings that extra bit more. Like, I probably mean in that comparison to the guys who have come off track that they've at least had races, and you kind of go to that next level in a race. And even those deep quarters and stuff, like, they're good sessions where you do get that speed ticking along, but it's still not a race. So, yeah, that's what we're kind of thinking. Bradley?
Yeah, like, I've never run down here, obviously, but from what I can tell, and from the relays that I've run in before, I feel like people tend to just go out too hard in these things as well. And, like, I don't know how accurate your Strava is, but, you know, when your first K is your quickest of the race and then it's sort of a gradual decline, it's like you just get this excitement because you're part of a relay and you cook yourself too early?
Was my first K the quickest one?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, you're in 2:58 for the first K, which half of it's uphill.
Yeah, that was uphill. That was the hardest K of the day.
Yeah, but as your quickest, as I feel.
Yeah, I don't know. With all those twists and turns, I don't know how accurate those Ks are. Yeah. But, yeah, I was running on, like, adrenaline at the start as well, because you're kind of like, all right, catch this guy. You got blokes hunting you down. And that kind of perceived effort, like, I think it's a real good art. Runners who can run well at cross-country know how to judge their paces over those courses. Whereas I was just like, I was all over the shop. Just felt like my arms and legs were just going as fast as they could, and I was running 100% the whole time, and it just hurt. Yeah, but good. It's got to make you tough, though, doesn't it? Like, tough runners always come from cross country to then they get on the roads and go quick.
Yeah, it's a Ballarat thing. Ballarat, you know, there's a guy you've probably never heard of called Brian Lurie, and he made, like, 6 or 7 world cross country teams for Australia. Ballarat dude.
Oh, is he?
Yeah, don't you love how the moves, it's all that... Hey, how long have you lived in Ballarat for?
2 years.
Is it ringing?
Yeah. Where were you before that?
Oh, it's floated around.
It was Chico State, wasn't it?
I've tried out all the spots. I found my liking. I found a good spot down here. Yeah. Toughness. Anyway, we'll get on to toughness later.
I'm trying to recruit people to move there, I reckon. It's the best spot in Australia to train.
Yeah. Has been lately.
Yeah.
Well, I said on my Strava during the week that Mulligan's Flat's no Ballarat, but it'll have to do until I convince Viv to move.
No, I love how he whinges about sitting in the car for like an hour and a half. Like, mate, you got no idea. Hour and a half in the car.
I had a hard upbringing on the end of a shovel. Oh,
mate, my first job was on the end of a shovel as well. Don't go talking about it. Just because I don't get on other podcasts and do like This Is Your Life kind of stuff at this end, it's, we can't all do the sympathy vote over there.
Oh, someone wants an invite.
I don't want any invites. Let's get on to some news.
Yeah.
London Marathon, Monday night, Tuesday morning our time, wasn't it? Did you watch it live? Did anyone get up for it?
Well, Boston or London?
Ah, London, that's what I meant. We'll start at the start.
London, London was Sunday.
Boston.
Yeah.
Monday night.
Was Monday.
Patriots Day.
No way.
I tried to, like, I turned my phone off Monday night and then got up in the morning. And I was like, right, I think I'm going to be able to, like, find this hot, because I had Tuesday off work, and I'm like, I'm just going to sit here, do some stuff on my computer, watch the whole race, don't want to know the result. First thing I type into YouTube, like, Boston Marathon full race, all this Yuki Kawauchi stuff and, like, Desi Linden stuff comes up, and I'm like, no, this can't be true. Like, and they're all running in, like, sports jackets and stuff, and I'm like, nah, what the hell is this about? And then, yeah, it turned out to be true. Could not believe it.
It was insane.
Yeah. How'd you guys find out?
Must just been on, yeah, just online, I guess. I've only seen, like, snippets of it, you know, like a 3-minute sort of recap. That's all the footage I've seen.
Mm.
Yeah, I had an athlete, Kirsty, running in it, and she told me, like, a day or two out, she said, oh, it's going to be bloody cold. There is not a single pair of gloves or arm warmers available in this city. They've sold out entirely. So I thought, oh, shit, it must be cold over there. It's going to be bad. If the entire city, all the running stores gone, like all their cold weather gear is gone. So I knew it was going to be bad, and then I woke up and I saw the photos of freaking Desi finishing in a bloody jacket, gloves on, going, who the hell runs in a jacket? Like, that's a warm-up top. We don't get it, though. Like, it's totally different over here. It's never been cold enough for me to do a workout in a jacket, ever, wherever I've been. Like,
was it that cold, though, or just the rain and the wind? Like, was it like 5 or 6 degrees? Like, I don't think it was ridiculously cold, but maybe the wind chill made it even colder. I'm going to look that up now.
It never got above, like, feels like temperature, never got above -2, I don't think.
Oh, like, yeah, right, okay.
So, yeah, so the actual temperature of the air was about 0 to 5, but the wind and the rain made it like a -2 to -5 type feel. So, yeah, it was fucking cold. And you could tell early, like, this was brutal. No one wants, like, we're going to try to be as comfortable as we can the whole way. Like, in the main pack for the ladies when they went out, because I think they went out first, right? So I watched a full replay the next day. It was crazy watching the women go out just jogging. Like, I think they went through in 19 minutes something for their first 5K. And I'm going, oh, man, this is going to be a long day. Like, imagine training to run 2:20, but really being out there for 2 hours 50 or something. Like, this is going to change the dynamic of the race. If you haven't done any long runs, maybe longer than 2 hours 15, but suddenly your race becomes 2 hours 50. Like, there's a different dynamic at play. And then it did end up getting moving a little quicker. Like, the Ethiopian chick left the group too early, obviously. She led for probably, like, 80% of the race. Blew up, just like Jeffrey Karui on the men's side did, probably left a bit early as well. Yeah, it was a good race. Like, I really liked it. And there's some real takeaways, I reckon, for the average punter. Like, takeaways, like, being patient, for one, wearing good clothing, to, like, almost sticking to a... One of the good takeaways, I reckon, was adjusting your expectations. So not going out there and going, today's going to be the day that I run my PB, but just backing the pace off and running to your own feel. I thought it was a great race for, like, the average punter to watch and learn a lot from.
Well, you could have got two bigger average punters to win it in a way. Like, it seems like it was a real win for the underdogs a bit. I don't know if underdogs is the right word, but just, like, crowd favourites.
Grinders.
No, she's not. She deserves not to be an underdog. Like, yeah, but why do they always kind of... Is it just because she's not sponsored by Nike and stuff that she kind of gets less publicity and she's more of a... I don't know. I just feel like she's like, yeah, I was stoked to see her win because she doesn't seem to be the one who gets all the attention all the time. Maybe that's it.
Yeah, she's been on flow track videos, like, where she runs through the snow. She does, like, long workouts when it's freezing cold. And she works, I think, I don't know whether she still does, but I know she spent a fair bit of time, like, working in the Hamptons, like, shoe store in Michigan, like, lives in a cold weather climate. Yeah, it's, she's a tough lady. And it's weird because some people I've read have been like, oh, it's so, like, almost demeaning that we're calling her a blue-collar tough runner. Like, why can't we say that she's just a really good runner? Mm. And I think it's it comes down to she performs really well when the chips are down. And I think that, like, that's what some people are talking about when they say tough. And maybe, like, a lot of this, like, everyone, whether they're meaning to or not, is comparing them to Galen Rupp. That's how I read this whole commentary on the Boston Marathon. Who's tough, who's not, who's blue collar, white collar. It all comes back to Galen Rupp. Like, this guy is the ultimate white collar runner, endless budget for his training, never worked a day in his life, totally set up, like, his whole career about running. He's had access to everything. He uses all the latest innovations, being rich as hell, like, always on a massive contract. And so I think, like, when we talk about Yuki winning or Desi winning and their blue collar style runners, it's always in direct comparison to what Galen is, who is in the race.
Hmm. Good point. Yeah, you've done a good job of summarizing that. Did you see did you see the reports that she was thinking of pulling out and told, like, Flanagan early on that she'll pull out, and then when Flanagan went to the toilet, she kind of dropped back and made sure Flanagan got on the back of the group again, and then thought she'd do the job out front and kind of try to bridge that gap for Molly Huddle, and then all of a sudden thought she was a chance to finish top three and would have been a half-decent payday to finish top three, and all of a sudden she was winning. Did you read all that stuff?
Yeah, I did, and that was probably my takeaway as well, is that even, like, the top athletes have rough patches throughout a race, and not to throw in the towel, like, just to keep going, you know? And so that was on the Desi side. But then did you guys read the article that Brett Lana put together about Yuki's run?
Yeah, Japan Running News, yeah.
Yeah, and just in a way, like, he almost, like, the way that he ran the race, basically just stuffed with everybody else's head. Like, everybody else was expecting it to be run a certain way, and he just went, stuff that, this is the way I'm going to run it. And yeah, but obviously worked for him. So, but yeah, I'd recommend finding that article and reading it. It's a really good recap of his race.
Yeah, we'll drop in the show notes.
And how he beat those guys that maybe were a bit weak mentally.
Mm. Did you hear the commentary? I'm not sure what commentary you heard, Julian, but was it the same one as me that was, they were kind of bagging him out for, like, making surges and stuff like that, thinking he wouldn't be there at the end?
It was David Monty, right?
No, nah, I don't think it was David Monty. Jeez, don't put him in that. Mm. No, I don't think it was him.
Yeah. His name is David, though, I reckon. I reckon they've said David a few times, and I'm like, oh, shit, it kind of sounds like David Monty, but it never actually said the commentators' names, and I think they'd be pretty happy about that because, yeah, they were like, this guy's suicide pace, he's not going to factor in at the end. I think something like he's going to be carrying a piano on his shoulders up in the last 10K.
He's only doing it to get on TV early, like, because he did an insane first K. Like, first K was like 4:32 or something, 4:30, yeah.
And that was part of his plan, like, if you read the article, he's trained like this. And I think if you really put a lot of thought into who you were going to pick, like, Yuki has won a marathon, or he ran a sub 220, like, maybe like 6 weeks ago or something. I'm not exactly sure of the time frame, but in the Massachusetts winter.
Yeah, we spoke about it. Remember that video of him coming onto the track and, like, it was on ice and skating around?
Yeah, and like, this guy handles temperatures really well, like extreme temperatures. He has experience in conditions that aren't great. He's certainly not, like, only races when conditions are perfect. He bloody ran like a 66-minute half in a Pokemon suit or some shit the week before. He's just incredible. I love him. I think he's amazing.
So he won. So my debut marathon was in Nagano in 2013, and it snowed. And he won that in 2:15, I think, in the snow. So yeah, he's used to those conditions.
And then you've got Desi coming from Michigan. Like, that place is cold, and they're coming out of winter. So, like, without, and you'll get stuck into me, but when I was in Berlin last year, I'd come out of a winter where every single one of my hard sessions was done when it was raining and windy. There was one session that was good weather out of 10 of them. So there's a certain element of hardiness, I think, that you gain from doing that, where the weather starts to have less effect on your mood and your outlook, and you go past, like, that element and how it can affect you. You can deal with it better than someone who might skip a day when it's wet to run when it's dry. I really found, like, a winter in again, you're going to get stuck in me here, but a winter
We're not going to get into you.
But I get what you mean. I know what you're saying, a winter of hard training and doing key workouts in really shit conditions, just, it allows you to, relax when the chips are down, or when things aren't going your way, or when you have to take your eye off the watch a little more. Yeah, it's just a, and that's what these two athletes have done.
But it seems like it was worrying Desi though early, like if she said she was thinking about pulling out and stuff, and it almost, I saw a few things from some sports psychologists about, like, when you change your thinking to help other people out, it can almost, you know, I don't know, that mentality of what you're out there for changes, and it can kind of, yeah, obviously change your suffering thoughts.
Yeah, well, that's what I think I've mentioned it before, like, having someone else in mind when you're out there, almost like it's like coming back to, like, doing something for someone else instead of for you. So, like, chances are we don't care enough about ourselves to push ourselves past a certain point of hurt. But when you introduce someone, and this is maybe not, like, specific for her and Shalane or Molly, but, like, if you're picturing or setting your race up to be beneficial, or the purpose of your hurt is for somebody else's, to dedicate it to someone else, you can go to darker places and you can push a lot harder. And I think that there's probably an element of that to how her helping Shalane worked for her.
Mm. Were you disappointed, boys, in the amount of elites who pulled out?
Bradley, go on.
I don't know. Like, probably. Like, I feel in those races, I feel sorry for the people that are going there to run a particular time, which is most people in a marathon. At the pointy end of the field, time's irrelevant for those guys. It's about winning a race. And so I'm more surprised that those people pull out, because they're all all the elite guys are capable of running 2:15 or whatever the winning time was. So for them not to stick it out was, I guess, disappointing.
You're not sure of the individual cases, but, like, you look at Flanagan and Huddle, and I watched the Let's Run videos of those guys afterwards, and just what they described, like, they're in a stack of pain and didn't know where they were and absolutely blew to pieces and ran times so much slower than what they're capable of. But hats off to them for sticking it out when it would have been super easy to pull in the side and get in the bus and go home and save your legs for another day.
You know what I liked? Well, one of the things that I read afterwards was a discussion on what happens when your body starts shivering and how it just rips the glycogen out of you. Like, in order to fuel the shivering to keep you warm, you just, like, you burn calories at a rate, I forget what the actual amount was, but it was at a huge, like, multiplied factor of what you would if you were just running. And so that's why it contributes to these absolute massive bonks. Like, there weren't just, like, little drop-offs or slowdowns, it was like, oh, you've hit the wall hugely and you're just jogging in now. And that, like, I think some of it comes down to that shivering motion and how you use so much more energy to shiver.
Well, even Karui, like, he was absolutely cooked that last 2 or 3K. Like, he was going backwards looking around. He still had that big white jacket on. He looked in, like, it's funny because 24 hours earlier than that was Gold Coast, like, which we were talking about last week on the show, and a whole different range of temperatures. And I was just thinking, like, imagine if a week ago you were half thinking about, yeah, I'm going to enter a marathon and put it on my bucket list and do one. And then you've sat down and watched the Commonwealth Games marathon, and then you've watched Boston Marathon. You'd be pretty, convinced pretty quickly that you wouldn't want to be doing that.
Yeah, and we got a bit of another example of a warm day in London as well on Sunday, Arvo.
Oh, beautiful segue, Julian.
Yeah.
Oh, you know. I'm a media man now.
It's his way of giving you the wind up. Change topics.
Hey, the other thing, back on Boston, those two females that come second and third, that was a good story. Like, they've just rocked up, paid their entry, got an elite start, and then won $75,000 US for coming second. Like, how good was their days?
I'm going to call it, though, and go, we're never going to hear of these chicks again. What do you think?
You've called it.
Well, we may not, but can't take it away from them.
Exactly. Like... They pulled it out on the day. They got lucky when all the elites, like, I don't know whether exactly. I've got this question in mind. Ever since Boston, I can't stop thinking about it. Like, what makes a tough runner and what makes a soft runner? And why did the elites on that day get beaten by people that aren't as talented than them? That's what I just can't stop thinking about this question.
Well, the bonking factor had a bit to do with it as well, and I read Ross Tucker, Sweat Science of Sport. He put on there that elites have generally smaller percentage of body fat, so you shiver earlier and then bonk earlier. So I don't know if that has anything to do with it, but that could be one reason why the elites really popped. But Desi, do you think Desi'd have a... Yeah, she wasn't a cuss. Yeah, she'd be in the same boat as those girls.
Same with Yuki. That's not a fat dude.
I mean,
a bit thicker through, like, the quads. Strong quads on him, but...
Here's a different story. You can't put him in the...
No.
An outlier to all these conversations.
True, yeah, true.
I see he's going to go full-time athlete now. Good or bad move?
Oh, I mean... I can't see it paying off, to be honest. I think he derives a lot of what's great about Yuki, and a lot of what drives him is his, well, to me, I feel like he has a bit of an us against the world, like me against the world type attitude, and that's what gets him going and drives him and pushes him. I'm not sure whether, like, softening his life up to help the running is going to improve it. I reckon he's tough because of his position, and he can push himself further because he has this massive point to prove against all, like, the corporation teams and everything in Japan. That's my thoughts. I didn't like it. I don't think it'll work out.
Yeah, and if he's already kind of had this much success off what he's already doing, yeah, don't change it if it's not broken.
Yeah, but aren't there rules at the moment? The way, like, with the job that he has, like, he actually can't even earn as much money as what other runners can. So, like, he doesn't get any appearance money or can't accept it. Or I even heard something about his prize money. He can't get that until he retires or something. Like, there's all these rules in place. So I'm not exactly, but whereas if he goes full time, then I guess all those rules go out the window and he can do whatever he wants. He can get his appearance money. He can access all of his prize money. I'm not 100% sure of the specifics, but I know that there was something about that while he's employed in the current job that he's doing.
Interesting, Brad. Talking about prize money, a bit of prize money was given out at London Marathon on the weekend.
Oh, good segue, yes.
Oh, he didn't like mine enough.
Well, we had to put another one in there.
He has to control everything.
Yeah, that's my. Nah, I was just stuffing with you. Did you watch it live?
Yeah, I did. I was very excited for it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good work. Eurosport.
Yeah, coverage is also pretty ordinary, though. They haven't invented the old split screen yet. I watched it on BBC, I think. I'm not sure where I watched it. But, they just cut away, and then you go back to the action, and, so much of the race has happened.
Mm.
Hey, Mo Farah was gutsy.
Yeah, I thought he was good.
Yeah. Odd racing.
Yeah. I thought he got really good from, say, 20 to, between 20 and 30K. I reckon he was really good and looked really smooth. Before that and after that, not so good. But 20 to 30K, I thought he looked, like he was potentially going to win. Having said that, Kipchoge is just a machine. From kilometre one, he just tucked in behind the pacemakers and almost pretended that nobody else was racing, just that those pacemakers were there purely for him, and that was it. It was like a training session for him. I don't think he ever looked like. I guess he handed his drink bottle to maybe another competitor a couple of times, but he was just robotic, just tucked in, and that was it. He knew he was going to win from K1.
He's insane. He's so good. And he just kind of broke that guy at the end, just gradually, no aggressive moves, just keep doing your thing and just slide away.
With a smile on his face.
Yeah, he's just the master, isn't he? Did you see his new shoes?
Pacing, though. Do you think they're a bit too aggressive? I have been told that the first 5K of London is downhill, so you'd expect them to gain a little bit of time, but 13:48 first 5K?
1:58 pace, wasn't it?
Well, I think it was 1:56, actually.
Was it? Yeah, right.
Yeah, and even the women as well. Look what happened to the first two, through 5K. Just did not end well at all. And this is where I think people just don't take into consideration the conditions. That's where Kipchoge's run was great. He didn't fade much at all, but everybody else, you just got to dial it back in those conditions a bit.
Yeah, I was actually surprised Mo went with that pace, to be honest, because it was so hot. I thought he could have sat with the next pack and then still probably picked everyone up and come third.
Yeah.
Well, there was a fuck-up. They fucked up the pacing packs. They ended up just merging. There was supposed to be one at 61 minutes and one at 61:45, but it just didn't happen.
Is that what happened?
Yeah, there was the paces for the 61:45 ended up just jumping in. It all merged. So that's why it was a bit of confusion out there, and there was a long strung out line. It didn't work well at all. It was a bit of a shambles.
Do you know, wise man, why Mo Farah was kind of arguing with the guy on the motorbike? Was that mixed drinks?
Mixed drinks. I don't think his drinks were in the right spot. That's, to me, he was making drinking motion. He was making that sort of squirting the drink bottle motion, and he was pretty infuriated. So I'm guessing he's missed a drink bottle back there. But geez, what a fucking princess.
I also read somewhere that he was complaining that the people that were manning the drink station were too busy taking photos rather than being there to assist. I read somewhere in an interview that's what his issue was. But also if you look at the footage where he missed it, he wasn't even paying attention. It was almost like the tables, he'd run past the tables and then went, oh, I've got to grab my drink, and then sort of went back. So it didn't seem like he was that aware of the drink station initially, which is his bad. That's no one's fault but his.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Next point on London, there are too many pacemakers. It's not a good look when you're watching a race and you kind of can't see the superstars because there's so many pacemakers in front of them for the cameras.
I don't know. I want to know more. What I want to know is who these pacemakers are that are fucking running in 61-minute pace. Let's see some names. I want them to get some exposure, some publicity. Who am I watching here? Because I'm just as impressed with this pacemaking as, the pacemaking on the, I thought on the, well, where was it? the pacemaker went through in exact in the half. So they went out a bit quick, yes, all right, so they fucked that bit up. But they still went through halfway in like 61 dead flat, I think it was, or 61.01 or something. Like, that's pretty good to nail that.
Sounds familiar, Brad.
I was going to say, Julian, those pacemakers, wasn't it pacing the lead women at Gold Coast last year?
Yeah, we did that, 1 second over.
I'd love to know what they actually get paid at that level. Like, to, you know, because those guys have obviously given up a payday somewhere else. Like, if you can run 61 minutes for a half, like, pacing, then you're probably a sub-60 half marathoner. So you could go and earn money somewhere else. So you'd have to imagine they're paid pretty well.
Do you reckon they get, like, a setup for next year's race? So you come and pace this year. Next year you've got this much appearance money. We're going to give you flights and all this. We're going to set you up. But you have to pace make 1 year first. Something like that?
I don't know. We should try and get Tom Bedford.
That would be a good one.
Huh?
I've got his old man's book, actually.
Leave it with me. I know Tom.
Do you?
Yeah. He was at Falls Creek 1 year.
If you can get his old man's book, it's worth chasing up.
All right.
No, that's not a joke. Get it. Try and find it on the internet first, then you'll know what I'm talking about.
All right.
He's got all the contacts, this boy, Julian. He's on the phone.
He thinks he does, on the phone to Michael Shelley yesterday.
just calling up the Com Games champ in a very controversial time, yeah.
Can we move on now? Because I'm done with overseas marathons.
Yeah, it was good watching. Good watching, though. We'll treat it.
Can we quickly do Canberra?
Yeah, go for it. Who was there? Brad was there. He knows it.
Brad's going to give us a run now. Canberra. Just a quick one. Who won? Who came second? Men, lady?
Dion won in...
Dion Finocchiaro.
Yeah, 2:25 something. I'm not sure the official time. But
they go through halfway in, do you know?
Oh, geez. No. I wasn't actually there running with them. I was off the back. Leave it with me. So, yeah, Dion was first. Dane was second.
Yep.
And hang on. I think they were through up in about thanks for springing this on me right now, but I think about 72 minutes through half, but it was like it's a different course to last year. Like it's reasonably hilly in sections, and there were certain parts in the course where it was super windy. Along Parkes Way, I was sort of pacing Crichton at the time, and there was this little hill that I was running up, and then in with the headwind as well, it actually blew me sort of back down the hill a bit. Like I went basically nowhere for a few steps. So, yeah, Dion won in 2:25:38. Dane second in 2:26:14. And Craig Appleby was third in 2:27:18. So if we have a look, I don't even know if they have. Yeah, they don't. The Canberra Marathon don't actually have a split at halfway. They have a 20K split, which was 68:52.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah, so... that was that one, and women, first women was Kirsten Malloy in 3:57. Kirsten Malloy. Second was Leah Willis in 3:08:23. And third, Jane Christensen in 3:09:44. So.
Would it be out of place to sort of say these times aren't great for a race that used to be one of the premier marathons on the schedule in Australia?
Look, conditions weren't ideal, but I also don't think that they've... So I guess Canberra Marathon now is run by Fairfax, And I don't think they've done any favours in trying to actually make a fastish course to get people along. There's certain sections of Canberra that's relatively flat, and they choose not to run on that section. Like, they run pretty much over all the hills that are close to the city, which doesn't make a lot of sense.
I'm not saying that. I don't know what happened. Like, it just seems like I remember, like, Mark Tucker and stuff winning this race, sub-220. I know that it used to have pretty good prize money, and so to hear a lady win it in, like, no ladies under 3 hours, that's not that quick. 225, good time, good running. Those boys obviously had a good battle, but it's still not that quick, like, for a major city marathon.
Yeah, but, like, why would you run it when you can go and run Gold Coast or Melbourne or where, you know, you're going to post a bit of a time? Like, I did it last year just to get a little bit more experience before Berlin.
You would have won last year.
I would have won, yeah.
Yeah, let's not forget that, because you've told me about 50 times already.
And the experience worked well for Berlin.
I think the only thing I've told you 50 times was that my marathon PB was slightly quicker than yours. I think that's the only thing I've mentioned 50 times.
You would have said, shit, I should have just come and done a tempo and taken this money.
I was quite happy to jog around last weekend.
Good right on those mate. Three anyway. Boys, though. They're good listeners to the show. Always listen to the show every week. Dane, Craig and Dion. So good to see those three boys out there.
Yeah, a couple of training partners.
Yeah,
apparently the
road to Canberra. I did read that in a bit of a blog this week on Run Culture, and I thought, geez, that sounds a bit familiar. The road to Canberra.
You read my product review too, Run Culture blog.
Yeah, is that on the Head Torch?
No, and I did one on the Shoe too.
Yeah, I've read those too. The Head Torch was the more recent one, though, wasn't it?
No, the Shoe was more recent.
I did like there was a line in your post on there about bagging out like 16-year-olds that sell your shoes at other retailers.
Yeah.
And the Asic Keanu. There was some good humour in there. I like that. If people haven't read it, go check it out.
Oh, mate, I can write so much better than I can talk.
I wasn't sure if your humour would transfer to the page.
I'm not good at talking, but if you give me like a chance where I can review what I'm going to say, it gets better. Anyway, Run Culture, yeah, good stuff there. So what's coming up then? Should I moose on the lucet right now?
Moose on the lucet. We've got a very detailed listener question, which we're going to do, but this show's already gone for an hour and 10 minutes, and we've got a couple of last announcements, so we'll hold that one to do it properly next time. Moose on the loose. There could be a few things this week to get loose on.
Yeah, I'm going to go straight to the one that I think most people are wound up about. I'm not going to offend anyone here, because if you're a listener and you get offended by this, you should stop listening. We don't want you. So Michael Shalley running past Callum Hawkins at the 40K mark, right? Was there a single runner, human, that's on the right side of being a good person that thought, oh, Michael, you've got to stop. You've got to help him. Like, you can't just run past and win this race. You got to go back there. You got to pat him on the head and say, it's okay, Callum, you'll be all right. We'll put some water on your head, whatever. Is there anyone out there that thought that, apart from some maybe like non-running, non-athletic type, someone who's never been in a competitive situation in their life, armchair commentator that is... And this shocked me that someone would actually put pen to paper and sort of suggest that Michael Shalley was somehow in the wrong for continuing to run past Callum Hawkins and finish the race in first position. And there's a few reasons why. Like, the main thing is this is not hold hands, let's walk and jog and frolic and do skips the whole way to the finish line and we'll all have a great time and I'll cuddle you if you're tired or whatever. This is a race, like a marathon. And the marathon is a hard man's race, and it's a matter of judging how much you can exert yourself to the perfect limit before you collapse over the line. That's a marathon. And Michael Shalley nailed it and Callum Hawkins didn't. And it's okay. Like, Callum Hawkins ain't saying, oh, Michael Shelley, you should have stopped and helped me. He knows what he did. He towed the line. He's a competitive beast, Callum Hawkins. That's what keeps him going. He would have hated Michael Shelley stopping. So for one, this is a competitive race where there's incentives for people. I don't know Michael Shelley's contract situation, but he probably gets a bit of a chop out for the next year by winning a medal at the Com Games. He gets exposure. He probably gets appearance money at races for the next 12 months. And this is a guy who is not on a big contract. I think we all probably appreciate that. So for him to win his second gold medal, like, this is big for him in his life. When this guy, like, his job is to win the Commonwealth Games gold medal. And him stopping at 40K is going to really... Well, he might go down a few interviews on morning TV or that, but he's not going to increase his potential for promoting his running career, I don't think, if he stops and helps Callum Hawkins, for one. Okay, so that's that. The second thing is, what can he do? He's not a medical person. He's there to run. His job is running. He's going to stop. Callum Hawkins clearly fucked on the ground. This isn't the same as when John Landy went back and helped Ron Clark in that mile race. Like, there's no chance for Ron Clark, like, for Callum Hawkins to get up and go again. He was done, on the ground, cooked. Shelley couldn't have helped him in any way. Third point, if Shelley stops, everyone behind him, in theory, should be stopping as well. So... this is the craziest thing out of my whole, like, the whole argument from these dipshits that write these articles about how Shelley should have stopped is, Shelley runs through, the next person, the Scottish fella, also runs through, leaves his teammate on the ground. Why is no one giving this Scottish guy shit? How come there's no articles about how the Scottish teammate left his brother in arms on the ground, lying on the deck? Like, this is so unfair to Michael Shelley. And if we're going to stop one runner, the first one passed, we have to stop the second one, the third one, the fourth one, and all of a sudden it's like, yeah, there's no race anymore because one person hits the deck. It just doesn't make sense. And, like, I feel people write these articles for a bit of sensationalism. Well, they might troll a Facebook page, but it went more than that. It was in the paper, so it's more than just trolling. It's sensationalism, but they don't realize it affects people, and it affects our sport by reading this. And it doesn't matter if Michael Shelley is the greatest bloke in the world or is an absolute arsehole. Michael Shelley runs that race again. We all know him as a great bloke. Everyone loves him. But if he runs that race and he's a convicted doper, and he's an asshole, he used to beat his wife, he bloody touched kids, whatever, he's still well within his rights at 40K to run past that guy on the ground, win the race, and we shouldn't be talking about how he should have stopped. Like, this has got me angry. I'm getting worked up here, so I'm going to stop and relax and just watch a video of Michael Shelley winning the gold medal.
I heard Steve Modighetti on Nova talking to Husey and Kate last night. Similar opinions, probably presented it in a slightly different way than you just did with the language. But, yeah, I thought this was, like, all the controversial stuff around the Gold Coast Commonwealth Games marathon. I thought this was the black and white one. Like, we didn't really need to talk about it. I remember getting a message off my mate 5 minutes later, and he kind of said, would have you stopped? And I was like, no, mate, like, it's 40K of the marathon. You're cooked as it is, like... Yeah, I didn't actually think this was an issue, and it's disappointing that it's been drummed up in this way.
Yeah, bullshit. It's some non-runner, non-athlete trying to create a stir, but he's fucking with people's lives doing it, and I hate it.
Well, absolutely no disagreement from me. And as you mentioned before, like, I did chat to Michael on a couple of days ago on Sunday, so exactly a week after. And you boys just think about the times that you've ran your marathon PBs. You're like, you're buzzing for a week after that. And, you know, you've run a PB. You haven't won a Commonwealth Games gold medal. So when I called him up, you know, you'd think that he'd be still on cloud nine, and he was actually pretty just jaded and didn't even want to really even talk that much about his whole Commonwealth Games experience, which is really disappointing. When here he should be celebrating, you know, back-to-back Commonwealth Games gold medals, which is hard to do in any event, but to do it in a marathon with all the things that can go wrong, that should be celebrated. And here he was a bit down in the dumps and just didn't really want to talk about that aspect of it. So it's disappointing.
You know, this is why I hate social media, because it just develops this fucking rolling stone, and it just gets worse and it gets more viral, and you see more flogs coming out of the woodwork. Just, I'm going to comment on this just to piss someone off. I'm going to troll this person. And there's no way people can defend themselves properly. And there's so much fake news that becomes of this. Like, it just, I can't stand it. I would be happy if Facebook, Instagram, Twitter all left and we could just go back. Because without sensationalism, I think the papers, they report things a little bit more evenly. That's how I wasn't around that long ago, but I don't remember there being such, like, strong sensational opinions in the papers.
Yeah, maybe they need to do that now to compete with the online world as well. Like, yeah.
Exactly.
As you said, if that wasn't there, they wouldn't be doing that.
But anyway, like, he's a champion. We all love him. And I don't think, like, no one's going to remember this. They're going to remember his gold medals. That's what I hope.
Well, people in our context will, but the general punters won't out there. Like, it's sad that the general public are going to think, oh, he was the guy that, didn't stop, whereas he should be remembered as the guy that won a gold medal after winning a gold medal 4 years earlier and a silver medal 4 years before that. Yeah. Like, absolute legend in Commonwealth Games marathoning.
Yeah, and he has said that once all this sort of settles down in a couple of weeks, he's happy to come on the show as a guest. So that's exciting news.
Croker exclusive coming your way.
And one more exclusive, which you boys don't even know about, just got a Instagram message from Jake Robertson, and he has agreed to come on the show as well.
Oh, well done, Brad.
So,
big dogs. Is that the guy with red hair or black hair?
He's not. So his brother's the one with the dark hair, Running Elvis, I think. That's Zane.
Running Elvis. I follow him. I like him.
Jake's the one that finished
from Biwa.
fourth or fifth. Yeah, so he broke the New Zealand marathon record in Biwa and then broke the 10K track record at Gold Coast.
This is cool.
He's like a
mental.
They're going to be two good stories, Brad. Like, there's not a lot of media, especially in the podcast world, around Michael Shelley or Jake Robertson.
Yeah, no pressure.
Need to put him on school holidays more often, Moose. Get some stuff
We're
done.
We're
going
to have
over
to
here.
Feed him some questions. I think you get a bit nervous.
Yeah, I do get nervous. I'm no good at this.
Nah, you're good at reporting. You're good. I haven't listened.
The ultimate groupie.
I haven't listened to your next one yet, but lead us in. Jordan Guzman. You interviewed him today. What did you talk about?
So Jordan, I guess if you followed the track scene, you know that he's, I guess, one of our sort of best 1500 meter runners. So we just spoke about how he got into the sport, because he was actually a 4.8 runner. Some of his achievements, including his emotional 4 minute mile. There's some backstory to that, which you'll go into. And I don't think we've seen the best of him yet. Like, he's not far away from getting the Aussie singlet. One of the most impressive things I think he's done recently was Steigen a couple of years ago. He ran a 4 minute mile, and then 40 minutes later ran a 29.06 10K when he was pacing Mitch Brown. So, like, that's quality running. So I hope you enjoy it.
And won Canberra half on the weekend too. We didn't talk about the half marathon, but he's versatile.
Yeah. So, he's run, 48 seconds for 400 and 28 high for 10. So that's pretty good range.
Created some sort of talking points around his Instagram comments, posts, that kind of thing. Can't ignore that. That was great fun for a while.
Was that with MTC?
Just sort of throwing it out there, saying we're not going to be intimidated, or stuff like that, I reckon.
Yeah, so he's good guy, and I thoroughly enjoyed sitting down with him and thank him for his time.
Enjoy that interview. Before we go, we'll set up a Patreon page. A few people have emailed the show asking if we'd set one up and suggesting that we should set one up. And we finally got around to setting one up. So Inside Running Podcast on Patreon. We'll put the link in the show notes this week. It's not to make us rich. It's always dodgy when you start asking for money and stuff. I hate doing it. We don't want people to contribute if you can't afford it. And the show will always be free each week. But if you can afford some spare dollars and you think this brings some good value to your ears every week and you want to contribute, we would be more than happy to have your assistance on board and put that money towards producing a better show. Maybe we could put an extra door on Julian's study so the bloody cat doesn't get in the background every second week, or hook the boys up with some decent...
I'm about to go bad boy Bubby on this cat.
Maybe they're free to listen to every week podcast, but they're not free to make. We put a bit of time into it. We have some hosting fees that we need to pay for each week. We want to get the boys, Julian and Brad in particular, some decent microphones so they don't have to use their phones to record in noisy cafes. You'll know what I'm talking about in a second when you listen to Brad's interview. And we want to put some money into some live events and stuff. So if you do want to contribute, there's a couple of different options. You can do $5 a month, which is named after Brad Croker, the Croker Contributors. You get some rewards with that as well. $10 a month, which is called the Loose Moose Reward. Or the Inside Running Extra Elite, which is for $20 a month. So if you think those descriptions fit something you might be able to afford, we'd really appreciate the support. As we said, though, the show is still going to be free for people to listen to. But with those rewards, you get some... With those costs, you get some rewards. They're all documented. Sometimes it's going to be an extra show every month. Sometimes it's going to be an early release. I think that's one of the options there. Sometimes it's even going to be an autographed picture of Brad or Julian, depending on which option you click on. So head to that link, check it out. We have had one person contribute already, Mel B. She was onto the page before we even have publicised it. She's contributing, so we really appreciate Mel's support to help us out. And, yeah, hopefully make this show a bit more high quality, I guess, for the listeners out there. Anything else to add there, boys? Do you contribute at all to any other shows?
No, I
think it's important to sort of mention that this isn't going to us, our beer fund. This is actually going back into the show. Mm. So, I mean, we do this as a hobby. Like, it's 9 o'clock. I came straight from work home, straight onto the podcast. Like, we don't do this to make money. We do it because we love it. But when you start having to really fork out for, like, to be honest, you've paid it all so far. Brad and I haven't done shit. But they're going to be going towards helping you out with the fees that you pay for whatever we... I don't even know how much it is.
No, but that's only like the first one. That's about $200-$250. But, like, after we're out of the red, like, it's... We'd be happy to start putting money back into the quality of the show. And yeah, but even, like, you know, this is time away from Viv and time away from Brie and Carly. And, like, yeah, we choose to do it. And when you got to do interviews at researching time... Well, no, I'm
how
saying...
How much do I pay for that?
How much do we charge that? Yeah. But,
no,
you know...
No, you're not getting
it. I think it's... Yeah,
I missed a breastfeeding course tonight for this.
It's come in handy. That's why you wanted to do it later. Tuesday night this week.
Yeah. Where I was meant to be. I said, sorry, Viv, can't. I've got podcast tonight.
So, yeah, if you want to check out that link there and there's some more options there. And it's just a great way for, creators of content to make sure they're not losing money on the content they're creating. But... In saying that, enjoy this interview now with Jordan Guzman. See you later, boys. Get that back right, Moose.
Yeah, you got to stay off it, if you know what I mean.
I have no idea what you mean. Nah. Is that some dirty joke?
Nah, running joke.
All right. See you, boys. Thanks for that.
See ya.
See ya. Got the best of both ways. Won't you come and take a walk in my shoes and tell me if you take my place? Oh, no.
All right, so cracking day here in the nation's capital, and I'm lucky to be joined by sub-4-minute miler Jordan Guzman. Thanks for your time, Jordan.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
I've referred to you as a miler, but it probably still is just a little bit short, because when I look at your PBs, you're very versatile all the way from 400 through to, I guess, half marathon, even though you've really only done one. Do you want to give the listeners an idea of what your PBs are all the way through from, say, 400 through to the half?
Yeah, so as a youngster, I concentrated more on the shorter stuff, so I've run 48.8 in my last year of high school for 400 metres. 800 probably doesn't really line up with my 400 and 1500 PB. It's maybe a little bit slow, but I only run one of them a year, so I've run 148 over the 800. 337 for the 1500 and 357 for the mile. They're my two main events, and then my 3K I've been pretty happy with the last 3 years. I've been able to run PBs consistently at the New South Wales 3K champs, so that's at 752, but I'd like to get that down a little bit more with my 5K as well at 1348, and then yeah, I was happy to run the 10K road PB I ran at the end of 2016 at 28.38, so I do have a little bit of range, and obviously spanning out to the half last week as well. It's probably not something that'll happen too often, but yeah, it's a good thing.
Yeah, we'll get to the half marathon a bit later on, and I guess most of our guests that we have on the show, we never really talk about 400 metre times, but I think it's probably a good place to start, because you haven't always been a distance runner. I guess you've probably started off as more of a sprinter, and you mentioned to me before that you actually did decath as well. So do you want to just, I guess, explain how you got into the sport and your progression up until maybe the end of high school?
Yeah. I started off at little A's. I was a pretty bad asthmatic as a kid. I grew up in Sydney till the age of 4 or 5, and I think the doctor suggested that my family move out of Sydney and get me into a little bit more fresh air. So we moved up to Coffs Harbour, and my sister joined the Little A's club, and I kind of went along. And as I progressed through Little A's, my asthma slowly started to ease up, and haven't had to take my puffer for quite a while now. So yeah, I think, you know, the combination of that fresh salt air up in Coffs Harbour and that little bit of athletic exercise has helped clear that up. So that's kind of how I got into to running to start off with. And yeah, I guess the 400s, kind of just where I started, where I was seeing the most success through high school. It was quite hard, obviously, to train as a distance runner by yourself. There's no one to train with back then. So yeah, I just really, I don't know, just fell in love with the 400. And I met a few guys down in Sydney who I ended up training with when I was down there, and I joined the New South Wales Institute of Sport Fast Track 400 program. So they taught me blocks and taught me a little bit more to do with the 200 and that pure speed, because the way I ran 400s was probably more like an 800 runner, where I was really strong at the back end. So started focusing a little bit more on my starts and my blocks, which led to me going down to 200s as well. And just as I grew older, and the guys that were more specifically focusing on that could train more on the tartan, whereas I was on the grass. Just naturally kind of went more up in distance.
And so how did you get into that fast track program, and who was coaching you at the time?
So at one of the New South Wales champs, I think it was a gentleman by the name of Mike Hurst approached me and just mentioned that I had some potential, and that he was starting this New South Wales 400 metre fast track program. And he had some good guys at the time, Matt Lynch, who's run 46.0 I think for 400, was in the group. Kev Moore was in the group as well, and then there's a few other strong 47 48 runners, so it was a good group to join. And at the time, my main rival was Harry Schooler, and he was from the south coast, so he was kind of in the same situation as me with grass track, no one to train with. So once every 2 weeks we'd both kind of meet up in Sydney and train together through this program. So we were both running 800s as well at the time, but both kind of came down to 400, and he was always running quicker than me, and we were kind of battling off to see if we'd break 49 first. And yeah, he kind of got stuck at 49.00, I'm pretty sure. I was the first one to dip under. So we just kind of both trained together through that program for two or three years. And it was pretty helpful in my development.
Yeah, it's certainly a good place to start as a distance runner, because I guess at the end of the day, there's no substitute for speed. Like, if you can close a race well, you're always a good chance of winning. And I guess it's quite rare as well. Most people that run 400s who I've met, if you said to them, oh, we'd like you to run 1500s or 5Ks, or they'd almost prefer to quit the sport than run more than one lap of the track. So it's quite unique coming from that background. Where was the change in terms of going, okay, I'm going to leave the 4s, 8s, and I can actually see myself becoming more of a pure middle distance and even distance runner?
Yeah, kind of. I was pretty successful through high school when I first got into high school, and started to make those state championships. I was kind of just an early developer, so I was a head taller than everyone else, seen a little bit of success, and then over the next few years, started to get beaten again. And then towards the end of high school, I started to really find my feet. And I did run, I think I was 150.4 in my last year of high school and the 48. And I'd always kind of run 1500s just because I could through the school stuff. But I think it was the last year of high school, I ran 359.9 or something like that at state champ. So I wasn't bad over 1500, but I never really focused on it. Like, I'd run one or two of them a year. And then when I reached the open level, I just really couldn't compete in the 800. I don't know what it was, and I still can't really compete in the 800. It's got me a bit baffled, because obviously I do have good 400 speed and I've got good strength of the 1500, but just throwing two 55s back to back, I just can't seem to do it. I don't know why, but so I guess when there's only 8 lanes available for the track classics, I was missing out on a lot of them. And when I did make the field, I was just kind of sitting at the back of the pack. And it just really wasn't working for me. And I was still up at Coffs Harbour at the time. And my coach at the time said, well, why don't we look to build our winter base for the 1500 in the next season? And it just happened that season, towards the end of the winter, I really got talking to Bryce Anderson, and he convinced me to come down here and try this. And it was kind of like a simultaneous move from 800 to 1500, and then from Coffs Harbour to here. And both of them combined, I guess, just instilled that I do have potential over the longer distances.
Yeah, so that, I guess those that don't know you, you're now coached by Dick Telford. Obviously has a really strong squad here in Canberra, and also, I guess, athletes that he coaches remotely. And you said that Bryce sort of, encouraged you to move down. Was it purely for your athletics, or was it for study as well, or both? Or what was the thinking behind moving down?
Yeah, I guess for both. I always wanted to go to university. I wasn't really that great through school, but I always thought university was something that I wanted to do and wanted to have a degree. By the time I was 25, 26, I don't know if I'll quite get there at the moment, but I'm well on my way to getting a degree. There's that, but it was also athletic purposes as well. Obviously, Dick is a great coach, and I'd known Bryce for a few years. He had family up in Coffs Harbour and would always come up and run our local New Year's Day fun run, so we kind of met through that. And I had a few other mates who I used to run with, the only other runners I knew from Coffs Harbour, moved down here as well for ANU. One of them is now PhD in research at ANU, but they just, every time they come back on holidays, they tell me how great training was, and it really urged me to move down here.
So when you first moved down, what were the biggest adjustments to Dick's training? And I guess going on from that, how does a standard week look now compared to when you first moved down?
Yeah, well, I did contact Dick maybe 3 or 4 months before I did move down, so it was kind of a gradual kind of wean into, I guess, his program. So it didn't really differ too much in terms of the sessions from what I was doing in that winter preparation with my old coach, but there was a little bit more mileage added in my off days, and it didn't really change too much in the sense that, you know, 1 week I was doing something and then the next week I was doing something completely different. But it just developed over time to what I'm doing now, which is around 170k a week, and regular week is basically just an hour to 70 minutes Monday morning, and then I'll run 10k or so in the afternoon in gym, and then Tuesday just an easy run in the morning session in the afternoon, Wednesday medium long run, so I try to get up to 20-21k in the morning, and then 10 in the afternoon with gym again, and Thursday the same as Tuesday with the session in the afternoon, and then Friday I tend to try and take it a little easier and just run 8-10k fairly slow, like 5-minute k's, and really try and recover, because obviously that back up from Thursday night to Saturday morning is quite short. So Saturday is usually a pretty tough session out at Stormwell as well, so I have to be pretty well recovered for that, and then Sunday long run.
And so when you say you do gym, what does your sort of gym program look like? Is it, do you actually go into the gym, or do you do sort of just a circuit at an oval? Or?
So when I first moved down, it was more so circuits. I did do a little bit of gym with the 400 fast track program, but yeah, one of the main things when moving down was that Dick wanted me to get quite lean, and I was quite a big boy running the 800, so
I actually made a note here, because I remember the first season when I was still sort of doing some track stuff, you were a lot bigger than you are now. Yeah. Like, you're still running, you're running good times then, and was that something Dick actually said to you, that you did need to lean down a bit?
Yeah, well, Hursty told me as well, actually, in one of my first fast track sessions in front of everyone, he told me that I was 5 or 6 kilos overweight, and it was pretty embarrassing, so I really focused on that. And it's still something I really have to think about, because I think I'm naturally such a big boy. Yeah, it's just any time I have a bit of sugar or honey, it tends to just go straight to fat. So it is something I need to monitor. And I do tend to put on weight even while running 170k a week if I'm not eating that healthy. So, yeah, I do have to watch that. But, yeah, in regards to gym, it did start off more as circuits, and over the past year, I have found a few weaknesses in my glutes and hamstrings. So, been focusing really only this season in the gym and doing some squats and a few more plyometrics and a few more resistance exercises with the bands and that sort of stuff, just to strengthen those areas that are weak.
Yeah. And what are some typical sort of sessions? So you said that you're training out at Stromlo on a Saturday. I know you're generally at the track on a Tuesday, and then Thursdays could either be what, hills out the back of the AIS, or out sort of near Stromlo Forest, there's a loop that you do. So what are your sort of standard sessions on a Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday?
It differs a lot, actually, between season and off-season, and that's something that I do speak to Dick a little bit about, because sometimes I don't like it differing that much. But track season tends to be almost towards the end of the season, and races almost 3 days on the track. But at the moment it's track on Tuesday, and we'll tend to do for winter something like 4x mile, or at the moment we're doing 16x400s off a minute. You still get a little bit of speed in there. We usually finish off with 4 200s off 30 seconds, just to make sure that speed is still there for the milers. And we do have a young Ethiopian kid, Yosef Kemechu, who likes to run everything fast, so he tends to throw in like a 56 or 57 midway through those 16 400s, just because that's the only rep he's taken so far. So anytime he's at the front, it usually goes pretty quick, so that keeps me on my toes, which is good. And then the other two sessions are really just general aerobic sessions. We do a fartlek of something like 1 minute, 2 minute, 3 minute, 4 minute, 3 minute, 2 minute, 1 minute, off a minute, out of the Arboretum, which is 4K loop on dirt trails, some hills on there. And yeah, then Saturday, the pretty standard session is 3K, pretty much all out, and then a few 500 meter hills afterwards.
Might get to the dynamic of Team Telford, because it's like, I guess take out Melbourne Track Club and it would be the strongest squad going around in terms of the depth. So even from a 1500 meter point of view, there's what, three of you guys that have broken 340 this season. Then you've got, you know, guys like James Nipperis, Bryce that you mentioned. So how does the dynamic go so that you're not racing in training, or do you actually race in training, or is it a fine line?
Yeah, I think one of our major issues is having all of us healthy at the same time. So even if we do race in training, the start list isn't always full. But yeah, sometimes I guess we know when to push it and when not to push it. So some sessions we do, it's very handy to have those kind of guys just to basically race the session. But other times it's obviously handy just to have them ease back a bit and, you know, take a rep each and take some of the load. So Either way, we kind of look at training, and we all are kind of on the same page with it. It benefits us whether we're going out there and running a flat out 1200 time trial and basically turning it into a race, or doing something like I mentioned before, the 16400s, where you basically have 10 guys who can take a rep. You're only taking one rep a session, which is pretty handy.
And does Dick ever step in and sort of get you boys to maybe settle down when he doesn't want you pushing as hard in training, or not really, or he gets a bit excited by it?
Yeah, Talbot's not really one to tell anyone to settle down. He's usually urging us on to go harder. So. I think he gets excited by the competition as well, especially when we're all training well and we're all together.
Yeah.
So, like you mentioned, there's probably six of us capable of running close to 4 minutes for the mile now, which is
it's super
pretty
strong
handy.
Squad.
And then, a lot of us have run 8 minutes or for the 3K as well, so we've got some strength there, but obviously in the marathoners as well and the longer distance stuff, so tends that anyone can help anyone out on any given day, which is good.
Well, even running with you guys, and there's only probably less than a third of the squad there on Sunday rolling through the hills at Stromlo, it certainly makes the time go quicker, and it's a lot easier getting it done than going solo, which I tend to do a lot of my stuff by
for
myself.
Sure. A lot of the boys bring some pretty good chat to the table as well, which is good. Yeah. Some of them not so good, but I won't mention any names.
Now, I guess everybody who follows the track scene knows that you've achieved a lot in the last 3 years, especially within New South Wales, and I just want to rattle off a couple of your achievements. So you've won the New South Wales 3K champs 3 years in a row. I think the Albie Thomas Mile 3 years in a row. You've been a national medalist in the 1500 metres. 28:39 on the road in Burnie to split Brett Robinson and Stewie McSween. And one of these, so there was this meet Steigen a couple of years ago where you ran a 4 minute mile and then backed up and ran 29:06 at the same meet. Like, that's pretty phenomenal running. So with everything that you've achieved over the last couple of years, do you have a proudest moment or something that you look back on? And
yeah, that's a hard one to answer. There's always that kind of question when you enter a meet where they have to introduce you to the spectators. What's your biggest career highlight? And you look at other guys like Ryan Gregson, Australian record holder, or a lot of these athletes that have competed at World Juniors. And to be honest, I haven't done all that much. Despite you listing off some of my achievements there, and I'm happy with the times I've run and the things I've done, but I haven't done quite as much as I thought I would have at this stage of my career and that I want to do. So hopefully in the next few years some of those things come to fruition. But I think probably just the first time I broke a 4 minute mile is the thing that stands out the most for me, just because it is that substantial barrier, and there was a lot of emotion behind that personally as well as just the barrier itself, so that probably stands out, and probably regardless of what I do will still be my greatest achievement.
Yeah.
I think
feel free, you don't have to talk about it if you don't want, but some people would know the story behind your first 4 minute mile, and as you said there, it had a sentimental, I guess, extra meaning. Like, most people, just breaking 4 minutes is a special achievement, but for you, the lead up to that race in what happened the week before, it probably meant a hell of a lot more to you than most people. Did you want to touch on that at all?
Yeah, for sure. I don't even really think that I was quite in shape to break 4 minutes that day, or at all that year for that matter. So I had my girlfriend up in Coffs Harbour for a little bit, and I was up there for 2 weeks before this mile, so I wasn't really training with the group at all. I wasn't really focused too much on this mile. I just wanted to come down and have a run. I hadn't really run a mile. I think the last time I ran a mile, I ran 4:12 or 4:13 or something like that, and just wanted to get a little bit closer to the 4 minute barrier, and there's not many miles put on, so I thought I'd travel down from Coffs Harbour and run this meet. And so I was enjoying the holidays with my girlfriend and ended up getting food poisoning a week before this race, so I was in bed for most of it. And 2 or 3 days before the race, I started jogging again, and I was feeling pretty awful. And then I think it was the second day of jogging, I got a phone call from Mike Hurst, who told me my good friend Harry Scowler had passed away. And I guess that was pretty rough. And there's a part of me that didn't want to race, but just being such good rivals, such good competitors and training partners, almost, I guess, urged me to run for him as well. I ran with a black armband on, and yeah, just, I don't know, his parents seemed to think that, yeah, I don't know, they just didn't seem to be as saddened by the passing of him because of the achievements I achieved that day, and that it was almost both of us running, so
yeah
it was pretty emotional. And like I said, I didn't think I was in 4 minute shape, and I don't know where it came from. If anyone has actually seen that race, I'm pretty far back in the first two laps, so yeah, it was just something that I'd never forget.
Yeah, no, it's certainly a great achievement. And yeah, just speaking of the mile, though, I was doing a bit of research for here, and it says on the all-time rankings that it's that your PB is 357.9 hand time, which, do you know who that actually matches or equals?
Yeah, so that equals John Landy.
Yeah.
He's the first Australian to break the four-minute mile.
So that's pretty cool. I guess the only problem is that you've actually run faster than that, so if anybody from AA is listening, you may want to update that.
Yeah.
But actually, Jordan said before this interview that it's actually, he's quite happy with that, just being level with Landy.
Yeah, I did notice it. I had a quick look to see if they'd updated it after I ran my recent PB, and I realised they hadn't. And once I seen it was equal with Landy, they're both handheld as well, and it's both 57.9. I thought maybe I'll leave it there. It's probably not a bad guy to go down in history next to.
Yeah. You said before, like, as I said, you have achieved a lot in the last 3 years, but probably not as much as you'd like to, like, as you hope to have achieved. And I'm sure it's only a matter of time before you actually get that Aussie singlet. Let's maybe talk about a little bit about the 2017-18 season, and maybe also just how you go about planning, mapping out your season. Because I guess the last 3 years, you've always, you know, you've won New South Wales 3K champs, always in a pretty quick time, I think. Was it the 750? Which one was it? You pretty much ran the whole thing solo, almost. Was it the 752 or the 750?
Yeah, I've had paces for a little bit of it. The 752, I had Kev Batt take me to a mile.
Yeah.
The 754, I had Jai Perra take me to 1200. But yeah, both of them, I was just leading after the pace had dropped out. So 3K is something that I really feel like I could run a lot quicker.
And so obviously, you start off the season really well, and then people that followed your season, you'd often set up races here in Canberra, and you ran a 3:38 on a horrible day, with just having a couple of your teammates pace you. And I think is that the fastest time ever run in the ACT? Yeah. So when you map out your season, like, was that race planned a long way out, or it was that week you decided to actually do it, or how does that work?
Well, I guess it depends on what we're aiming on. So if World Champs or Olympics is later on in the season, then we don't put too much emphasis on times, obviously, in the Australian season. So the 3K is usually just to see where I'm at that time of the year. So hence the pacer and me just going out front and, you know, running as hard as I can. And they've probably been some of my best races, so maybe I should think about doing that more often. But, I guess this season, and the last few seasons for that matter, I've been chasing times just to try and get my name in the mix so that when I do turn up to Nationals, at least I've got a qualifier, and anything can happen at Nationals. And it hasn't really gone my way the past few years. I did have, I think, 9 or 10 B qualifiers for Com Games this year, but they didn't really mean anything, I found out later on. So, yeah, I was 0.4 of the A qualifier, and I really should have run it in Europe, but I didn't, and I put myself in that position. So we did schedule a few races. I ran 3:40, I think, in Sydney, just after that 3K champs. And then I went to Zatopek, and that was where I planned to run my 3:37.5. I fell over in the first 100. I think my training partner, Matt Dempsey, actually tripped me over. So, although he denies it. But, yeah, so those races, we kind of just looked on the ACT program, and I was a bit sick of travelling at that time, and didn't really think that driving up to Sydney, you know, to run a race with pacemakers who were in my training group was that ideal. So we just thought we'd give it a go in the ACT, and I did run 3:41, I think 3:40 high, just completely by myself a few weeks before that, and then ran 2:338. I had pace till the bell in that one you mentioned, and went 3:38.7, and that was quite windy, and then I had Josh Johnson paced me the 800 pretty sporadically as well. I think it was a 55 and a 60.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, drop out, and I ran 338.9 in that one as well. So I'd run some pretty good times, and I think in the right race, I could have PB'd. I was in pretty good shape, but obviously just didn't have that opportunity. So hopefully sometime this year I will.
And then later in the season, did you fall in another race as well? One of the Grand Prix before Nationals, or was
No, I fell at Zatopek.
And then obviously Nationals, so you're in good shape going into it, and then you got sick beforehand. So I guess having started the season so well, and then obviously the goal for the year was to qualify for Comm Games, was there anything that you learnt from the season or that you would have changed?
I guess just I think I got a little bit greedy. I think we all did the week before Nationals, so 2 weeks out I did, I think it was the New South Wales champs, we set that up to run quick as well and didn't really quite work out within the first few laps, so we ended up racing it, and me and Rory Hunter finished first and second, and ran 3:41 I think, which wasn't too bad, but then that next week I think we just went a bit over the top. We ran 3 by 8 minutes the next day, all at like 2:55 pace off a 2 minute jog, and that was literally the next day. We should have just been jogging, and then yeah, Tuesday we had a really good session, which I think it totaled maybe 7k worth of session, and halfway through we negative split at 151.800.
Yeah, that was one you told me about on Sunday. Do you want to just give like explain what that session was?
Yeah, so we ran 4 400s off a 200 float, and the floats are in about 40 seconds, and the 400s are in 60. Then we took a lap jog and ran 5 300s off a 100 jog. I think the jogs are between 22 25 seconds. And the 300s were 43, 42, 41, 40, 40, I think. Then another lap jog, and then this part of the session was supposed to simulate what I wanted to do at the end of the National 800, which was close in 150 and kind of, you know, just negative split every 200, kind of like El Garouge at 2000 Olympics, so... Yeah, I think I ran 58 for the first lap and then 53 for the second one.
Yeah, it's a lazy 151.
Yeah, and that was just after I ran 149.99 in Canberra, pretty much all out. So I think just going through that first lap a bit quicker takes it out of me, but negative split, I can run pretty much the same time.
And so what was this, about 10 days before Nationals, was it?
That was about 10 days out, yeah, and then we had a few other sessions. We ran 4 800s in around 2 minutes. On Stromlo, which is obviously quite tough, and then another session on Saturday with some 400s, which are in, you know, 53, 54 seconds.
Yeah.
It's probably just a little bit too much. I felt awesome that week, but after that final session, my throat started to get a little bit sore. Probably just pushed it a little bit too hard, so live and learn.
Well, you're young and you've got plenty of time on your side, so as I said before, it's like I have no doubt that you'll get your Aussie singlet within the next season or so. Which brings us to what have you got coming up now? Like, I noticed that you raced you did it as a training session, but you ran 30.20 at the New South Wales Novice Champs Cross Country, which, it's a flat course, but it's on grass, and it's been run for, like, over 100 years. And I remember Nipper saying on Sunday that only 3 people have ever broken 30 minutes there, and you ran 30.20 as a training session. So you're obviously in good shape. What have you got coming up?
So I was focusing a lot more on the longer distance stuff. I planned to run the Sydney Morning Herald half and wanted to run really well there, and was also planning to run Sydney 10. But things have changed a little bit, and I ended up winning a bit of prize money last weekend, and thought I'd just check out flights to America, and they ended up being exactly the same as the prize money I won, so, you know, I thought, why not? So... depending on how I pull up after the flight, I'm hoping to run Peyton Jordan on the 3rd of May, and then stay in LA for 2 weeks, and then run the USA Track and Field Distance Classic on the 17th of May, and then come back. So it'll be a quick 3 week trip, back for Leonora, and then see where I go from there. If I have run pretty well, then I might consider going over to Europe, but otherwise probably just focus on my winter training. And I didn't really feel myself for a long time after that sickness, and it's only really been the last 2 weeks that I have. So I was planning to just stay here all of winter and make sure that I'm ready for next season, but I think I've come back into shape a lot quicker than I thought I would. So yeah, it's kind of under consideration at the moment.
And so you ran the Canberra half marathon just over a week ago in pretty tough conditions, and it's not a super quick course, and you ran 66:33. Did you enjoy the half marathon? Is it something that you can see yourself moving up to in the near future, or you still feel that you'll be a miler, 1500 metre runner in the near future?
Yeah, it was definitely enjoyable. I did probably have my coffee a little too late, so I needed to go to the bathroom from about 10k in, which made it a little less enjoyable, but I did enjoy kind of the tactics and just that kind of almost feeling that you know you're going to fatigue later on in the race, but it doesn't instantaneously hurt. You know, like you go out for the first 5, 10k and you're feeling within yourself, and obviously you know by the end of it you're going to hurt, but you could kind of put in a little surge here and there, surge up a hill, and yeah, you just don't really get that with track. So that aspect of it I really enjoyed, and the same with the 10k road races, although they do go out a little bit quicker and you may be stinging a little bit earlier. Same sort of situation, so that's really why I like the road races. And I would like to run a few more halves, and Dick and I always joke about me eventually ending up at the marathon, but that's not for a long while now. I think I asked him if I could move up to the 5k recently, actually, and he said I've still got some unfinished business at the 15, so I don't think I'll move up to the marathon anytime soon.
Well, I guess us pure distance runners now that are just focusing on the marathon are quite happy to hear that you won't be moving up anytime soon. Give us a chance to stay high on the national rankings for a bit longer. I guess with your versatility, where do you feel like your best event, like, so in 10 years' time when you finish running, where do you feel like your best event will be?
Yeah, I'm not quite sure. Obviously, growing up, I always thought the 800 was my best event, and then it kind of just gets to that point where you don't know if you've got anything left in that event. And, it all just, the 800 kind of moved a little bit too quick for me, and I needed a little bit more time to think, and so I thought, you know, the 1500 was a little bit better. The moves aren't as spontaneous, and you know, you can kind of think a little bit more, there's more tactics in it. So that was kind of my mental thinking behind moving to the 1500, but at the same time I think I can run quick in the 1500, but I don't know if that's my best event yet. So obviously I have had some good runs over the 10k, and my 3k has been quite strong the past few years with relatively no competition. So I would like to test myself out a little bit more, like 3k, 5k.
Yeah, like I still think you've got a really good 10k there. Like to run 28:39 on the roads at Burnie, which the course record is not a hell of a lot quicker than that, really. Like it's up there. And so you've got that speed, you've got that strength, which brings me to the steeple. So we've pretty much gone, you've covered every event from 400 through to half, but the steeple. And spoken to a few people, including the current Australian record holder, who actually thinks that you've got all the attributes necessary to break his national record. Your thoughts?
He actually, when I was running with Sean a little while ago, he suggested that I give the steeple a go for Com Games, and in hindsight I probably should have listened to him, but I thought it was a good chance for the 1500, so you've got to back yourself, I guess.
Yeah.
But I did notice nippers on the board for Athletics ACT, and I think over the winter series he's put a steeple on every race, so there's a lot of options for me there, and I was planning to try one sometime in winter. Obviously the 3k is a little bit more distance orientated, so I think I can run it well off our winter base, so thought I'd give it a go and see what happens. But yeah, I just enjoy running, hence why I run pretty much every distance. I don't really specifically target one, but the 1500 is my favorite event, even though it mightn't be my best one, I'm not sure yet. I enjoy the kind of, I don't know, I guess it's just like a good combination of the speed and the fitness, I guess, and that aerobic capability. So
yeah, I know a few of us would be very excited to see what you'd run over the steeple, especially with, like as I said, like the strength and your speed, and like and you're a good mover as well, so I don't think you getting over hurdles would be a massive issue. Did you actually do any 2-4 hurdles when you were younger?
Yeah, I did a few 110-metre hurdles in decathlons, and actually I was the New South Wales All-Schools Decathlon champion, but I was also the only one competing that day, so I think that helps. But yeah, I wasn't that great at hurdles. I've actually done one steeple through high school, a 2K steeple, and I showed up to the warm-up track and everyone else was practicing over steeples.
Yeah.
And these are guys that I'd whoop over the 1500. And I thought, oh, look at these guys, you know, you don't need to practice jumping these steeples. And by the third or fourth lap, I was taking a bath in the water jump. I was knackered. So I think it is a little bit more harder than you think, but yeah, I'm willing to give it a go.
And you've been on a few overseas trips now. Do you have a favourite place that you've been to in terms of places to train, like outside of Canberra? Because Canberra's a pretty good place to train.
Yeah.
So outside of Canberra, where's another place that you've really enjoyed training? Yeah,
it's funny you say that, because I think the more I travel, the more I realise how good Canberra is. But I have travelled a few times, and I guess the enjoyment you get out of the trip is probably based around how you run. Mm-hmm. So while I have PB'd at both of my overseas trips the last few years, I didn't quite get where I wanted to be. So towards the end of the trip, I won't say I didn't enjoy it, but I wasn't enjoying it as much as I could. But I really liked Flagstaff. I think that's an awesome place to train, and although I don't really benefit too much from altitude, and I just think the training we do didn't really suit Flagstaff too well. That's probably the most similar to Canberra, I guess. So, I enjoy training there, and also Leuven in Belgium. They have a nice forest there, and the track's quite good. It's just easy to get around, and it's also similar to Canberra in that it's quite quiet. It's a university town, so they're probably my two favourites.
Now, I've been asked to ask you this question. So those that follow a bit of social media, I mentioned before that Dick's squad is quite strong, and obviously Melbourne Track. Has there been a bit of tension in the past between the two groups?
Yeah, there has been a little bit. I guess that's probably my doing. And also JJ, he's a little bit of a pest on social media, so I don't think he does anything, you know, does any favours for us. But yeah, I guess initially it just started off. Obviously, I don't know if everyone knows this, but coming out of high school, Bido was helping me out. So for 2 years I ran for New Balance with him, and he was good, and I think Bideau's a great coach and a nice guy, but he just didn't really communicate too well with me, and we never really seen eye to eye, and I just wasn't running as well as he probably thought I was capable of, and so he ended up terminating my contract with New Balance, and I was a bit salty about that, so that kind of started the whole beef, and then a few of the other boys down here have also had issues with Bideau, and I guess it just turned into us versus them, but obviously they're on another level competition-wise, so yeah, we can't really compete with them on the track just yet. So,
And what is the dynamic when you're toe-to-toe with those boys? Do you respect each other? Is there trash talk beforehand, or it's all pretty...
No, it's mostly just on social media. Yeah. I think we all respect each other, and... well, obviously I can't talk for them, but you know, I respect those guys, and I think they're great athletes, and they're obviously, like I said, a step up from me and probably anyone else in the squad, so I've got a lot of respect for them, and I think it's just, it's fun to have that sort of side to athletics as well, so I think not only us and them, but I think everyone else enjoyed that rivalry, and still does enjoy the rivalry, and while I haven't quite gotten to beat Grego yet, I think there's a lot of people that want me to, so one day maybe, before he retires, hopefully.
Well, you did get him on the road.
Yeah, I've got him on the road twice now, but I don't know if you can count that. It's kind of uphill, downhill, turn around, one day I'll get him on the track, but hasn't quite been there yet.
So maybe that's your 200 and 400 meter training out of blocks with those turns, getting out of the turns real quick.
I don't know what it is about Mitchell Street, but you roll downhill for the first half, and then it's just slightly uphill on the way back. And I think getting out of those turns quick, I kind of get a jump on them, and then I tend to just, like, I think my strength in the 1500 comes from the 5K, 3K yeah. fitness and going from a little way out, and hence why I plan to go from 800 out at Nationals.
Yeah.
But I just think because you really have no choice, there's no markers on the tarmac out of Darwin.
Yeah.
You just know it's 800 home once you turn around, and I tend to just pretty much go from there. And, the last few years, I've managed to run those guys off their feet. And I know they've been coming back from overseas and quite tired, but yeah, I think that's probably my best bet at beating Grego. Hopefully he's not listening to this.
And if it's slightly uphill, probably, you know, suits your strength as well.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. You know,
slightly uphill. So outside of running, what keeps you busy in Canberra?
Uni, I guess, at the moment. But yeah, it's, the way uni works in Canberra, is, especially UC, is quite good because they work on a trimester. So
yeah.
I don't do the middle semester, so I basically have off from 2 weeks' time until the middle of August, I think, and then you go for another 10 weeks, and then basically have 4 months off again. So I'm actually more free time than study time here in Canberra, which is pretty good. So I tend to just tinker with my car. I enjoy cars and spend most of my money on that. I should probably put it away for savings at some stage. But
yeah,
while I'm young, I guess, I just enjoy tinkering with my cars. And I actually got a drone for my birthday, so I've been playing around with that and practicing, so hopefully I can record a few more of my my trips.
And what are you studying?
I study sports media. So.
All right. Well, we might have to get you on board with podcasts. You can do a few audio grabs when you're overseas, traveling the place, and send them in. Cool. And so, you know, obviously, you're pretty much a student / full-time athlete. So you've obviously got a few people that support you along the way. Anyone you want to sort of give a shout-out to?
Yeah, so I guess my main supporter financially is Saucony.
Yeah.
They help out with a lot of my travel and my gear as well, so yeah, without getting all those free shoes, and I do think not just plugging them because they give me the gear, but I do think it's one of the main reasons why I'm able to run so much, and like you, I do run a lot of my runs faster than most people, so I think that's probably why I haven't really had any major injuries. So yeah, they've been great to me, and they're obviously great shoes, so I wouldn't represent a brand I didn't believe in, so really appreciate their support, and obviously my family and my girlfriend and Dick are quite supportive as well, and the Bankstown Athletics Club, so
yeah,
I've got a good support base at the moment, and hopefully keep that going.
Well, a few people will be quite happy to hear that you won't be there for the Sydney 10 in a couple of weeks. Might help Sydney Uni's chances a bit more.
Yeah, I know, but I think we're still going to win that winter point score.
Well, yeah, it's been great sitting down, and thanks for your time. And as I said before, like, watch this name. No doubt you'll have your Aussie singlet in the next season or two, and good luck with the studies and your overseas trip coming up.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Jordan. Born to the river, the black blood in my veins. I found out when I was just a child that your skin can bring you so much pain. Now I hear you say, you got the best of both ways. Won't you come and take a walk in my shoes and tell me if you take my place? On the sugar of my skin, I burn all your names. If it's all the same, I'll keep on walking. On the and I'm gonna hold my head up high. I was taught as a young man, doesn't matter if you're white or black. Just show love to everyone you meet, doesn't matter if it don't come back. Oh,